Ah,
the collective we.
We are one weird. I think we need one woman in here to sort of make it whole.
You're telling me.
Here we go.
Any ideas, Chris?
Yeah, I'm sure he's got an idea. Let's just check his computer screen. I'm kidding. I'm kidding, Jackie. He has nothing on it. There's nothing on the computer screen. Jackie is Kayla's gal, and I don't want her getting the wrong idea. There's nothing but important radio information on that screen right now.
Absolutely.
Isn't that right, Chris?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Get on with it. Move on.
I refuse to answer on the...
Me, on the other hand. Oh, that's an interesting thing. My wife was fixing my computer last night, and there on the toolbar was... the toolbar history indicated that
You haven't learned how to erase that yet?
I have, but, she was only gone a few days, and on the toolbar history, she found something. Mm. She's like, what's this? And I'm like, you were gone.
Wrong answer.
And she goes, okay, but it seems kind of recent. I'm like, why would I go there if you were here? And she said, okay.
Don't go there.
No, she's got no leverage on that one, because when I was back in L.A. once, I went on her computer, and I'm like, oh, my God. You know, she's cleaning out her temporary Internet files. I'm like, wow. There's several pictures and stuff. I'm like, what is this?
Several.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
And like, they weren't you?
Yeah, of course they weren't me. I don't. If there are any pictures existing of me, I'd certainly like to know about it.
The history button. Demolished relationship.
Yeah, really.
Definitely. So let's get on with this. Let's see. It seems to me that President Bush is going to be giving the commencement address at Calvin College, Riley. Mm. Calvin College. If you don't know what Calvin College is, let me read some of their mission, their vision. We seek to be agents of renewal in the academy, church, and society. We pledge fidelity to Jesus Christ, offering our hearts and lives to do God's work in God's world. Here's under their purpose statement of Calvin College. We offer education that is shaped by Christian faith, thought, and practice. We study and address a world made good by God, distorted by sin, redeemed in Christ, and awaiting the fullness of God's reign. That's Calvin College. This is where, apparently, Karl Rove arranged this for him. Like, so this, what's becoming clear to me is that this is a very deliberate plan on behalf of Karl Rove and the fanatical Christian right to keep this this mobilized. And this is George Bush obviously aligning himself with that, very real plan. But if you look at the course schedule for Calvin College, you find that, if that doesn't disturb you, what I just said, the course schedule will. You have classes like The Dark Ages, 1992 to 2000.
Oh.
Dust and Ribs, The Building Blocks of Human Biology. We have women's studies, or how to cook for your man. I mean, these should have said everybody. You know, judicial process, is it for everyone? This is the course descriptions at Calvin College. This one, very disturbing. Where is it here? Oh, money and banking, the Judom's niche. Is that wrong? Yeah, I don't know. It upsets me. That upsets me as a Jew, not unlike this one. The Holocaust, a good start. These are the classes at Calvin College. Earth science, 7 days to perfection. I'm not making this stuff up. Am I making it up? You think I'm making it up? All right. Well, let's move on. We got Rob Nordlund coming up from Newsweek magazine. Newsweek magazine's Baghdad bureau chief. We've talked to him before. We got some questions about what's really happening in Iraq on the ground now.
We'll get to that and a whole lot more when we come back here on Air America Radio.
Morning Tradition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
Four past the hour. Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hey,
you just go to the menu on your computer. Go to Internet Options. All right, and then find the privacy thing, and then delete cookies, delete Internet files, erase toolbar history. That those of you who know what I'm talking about know what I'm talking about. All right, and as many men have said, This will save lives. Okay, and we
also
are,
jobs.
Jobs,
just in case
lives.
You're doing something you shouldn't be doing at the workplace.
This goes out to women as well, you know, because I know some of you out there, you say like, no, why? But I happen to know for a fact that you know, some of you indulge as well, and there's no crime in it other than you got to be careful in this day and age, and you don't want your computer to get sick,
yes,
and you don't want to lose your job or your relationship because of it. But this is, you know, this is not the time or place to talk about this. This is breakfast time. This is drive time.
So several service announcements.
Yeah, I'm just trying to help out a little bit, you know, because this is not really the themes that we deal with on this particular program, but it, you know, it's a public service announcement. So what we do deal with here is war. We deal with Iraq. There's been a lot of action in a very bad way, very organized insurgency attacks. You know, dozens of Iraqi National Guard people killed, a few Americans killed. There are reports coming out from the government saying that this is a desperate insurgency. There are other reports saying this is a very well organized insurgency, picking its time to make certain hits. The development of a government is in a stalemate.
Well, see, that's where all of this seems to come together. Both Condoleezza Rice and Dick Cheney have told the Iraqi leadership, such as it is, hurry up and get this over with, because they see the formation of a government as being crucial to ending the insurgency. And one of the things I want to talk to our guest about is whether or not that actually is true.
Yeah, well, we've got our guest on the phone. He is Baghdad bureau chief from Newsweek magazine. He's been our guest before. It's always a pleasure to have him on. Rod Nordwin, good morning.
Good morning, Rod.
Good morning.
Yeah, you're in Iraq today. Now, we've been, you know, I've read a lot of pieces as of late. What is the status of like where you are? There's less reporting coming out of Iraq about certain things. We're getting reports that American troops are not engaging as much, and there seems to be a very high number of Iraqi National Guard troops and security troops being killed. Is that because more of them are engaging and less Americans are engaging?
I think it's a little bit of both. The Americans have wanted as much as possible to let the Iraqis take the lead on things. And, you know, that's, everybody recognizes that the only way we ever get out of here is if they take over the job and take responsibility for security. And then there have been greater numbers of trained troops, Iraqi troops and police, coming on the job. Another major factor is the insurgents have decided to target them because they're easier to target than the Americans. They don't have, you know, as much firepower or as much air support and so on. And they're also out on the streets a lot more. They're much more accessible than the Americans, who tend to be either in bases or in very heavily guarded convoys.
Yeah, I just read a piece, you know, recently by Mick Ware, who said that they're engaging in a program similar to what they did in Vietnam with the advisors. Now, would this be also a reason why we're seeing more dead Iraqis?
Because they have American advisors?
Well, it's just that, you know, there are less American troops, you know, engaging and more Iraqi troops being put out there with maybe just one or two American advisors.
That's right. I mean, that basically is true. The Americans, they call it mentoring. They don't like to use the word advisor because it has the reminiscences of Vietnam. But they're sending usually a team of like half a dozen or 10 American troops will go along with an Iraqi unit. And they're there for a number of things. One, to help train them and give them advice, but also to be the interface between the Iraqis and the rest of the American military in terms of things like fire support, communications, calling for a rapid reaction force to come. I think if anything, that helps the Iraqi forces. It gives them something they didn't have before, which is the ability to readily call on American support when they got in trouble.
That's good.
And that's emboldened them to go out on the streets more.
Rod Nordland, we are reading reports here in the States that are talking about the formation of the Iraqi government and the role, if any, that Sunnis are going to play in that. They, according to one report we saw, they dropped their demand to include members of former members of the Ba'ath Party in the new cabinet. But how closely do people tie the inclusion of Sunnis in the new government to ending the insurgency? I mean, do people believe that that kind of inclusion is going to stop the ramp up of the insurgency?
Well, I think people look at it another way. They look at it that if Sunnis, incredible Sunni leaders, are not included in the government, then it's only going to send larger proportions of the Sunni community over to the side of the insurgents. If they don't see any future in this government, a government dominated by the Shia and the Kurds, there's just that many more of them who are going to throw their lot in with the insurgents.
But didn't, I mean, at a point, the Sunnis decided, many of them, to boycott the elections. How do the Shiites and the Kurds look at Sunni demands for inclusion now?
Well, actually, the impetus was from the Shiite leadership, and beginning with Ayatollah Sistani, who ordered them, basically, to include the Sunnis in their government and insisted on that. And the problem has been, one of the reasons this process has gone on for so long is getting down to the details, first of all, which Sunnis would be credible and would be willing to join the government, but wouldn't be seen as just puppets of the Shias and the Kurds. And then just working out a deal amongst themselves, how many positions to give up by the Shias and the Kurds so that they had the seats available for the Sunni. And you know, the devil has been in the details trying to work out that deal, and until today we still don't have a government, almost 3 months after the elections.
How close are we? I mean, what are you looking at on the outside as a time frame for that?
Well, you know, I saw Jafari last week, the prime minister designate, and who's a Shia, and in the morning of Thursday, and he said, "Well, we'll have a government by this afternoon. I'll be announcing it." And he seemed quite confident that was the case. By afternoon, everything had fallen apart, and we saw other officials who said, "You know, there's no way we'll have a government even by Tuesday." Now it's Tuesday, and they're saying again, "We're hopeful we'll have a government today." And you know, I think you know they're always hopeful, but the fact is they just can't seem to make the compromises they need to make to put this government together.
Now, Rod, Iyad Alawi's party, the Iraqi List, is asking for 4 cabinet seats. Any possibility that he will get that?
He's asking for a lot more than they're willing to give him, not only in terms of the number of seats, but in terms of which seats. He wants a big say, for instance, in defense policy, either the Minister of Defense post or some sort of deputy premiership with responsibility for security affairs. And they're not willing to give him that. The Shia especially are deeply suspicious of Alawi. They feel that as a former Ba'athist himself, although he's a secular Shia, they feel that he's just too close to the Ba'athists and that he's allowed them to infiltrate the security services, something that they're very concerned about.
Hey, Rod, any word as to what they're going to do and when they're going to do anything with Saddam Hussein?
Well, they said, last we heard is that they plan to try him by this year.
Mm-hmm.
But I think they're a long way off from that. It's a complex case to put together. They have a shortage of resources in terms of judges and investigators and so on. And there's also a political issue. If they're going to have a constitutional referendum in the middle of the year, assuming they ever get a government together that can write a constitution, then they have the constitutional process. I think there'll be a lot of people who will feel that perhaps it's better for the new constitutionally elected government, which won't come into office until 2006, to be in charge of trying it. Now, so far they say that's not the case, that they can go ahead with the institutions they have. But, you know, we may well see that slip. Certainly it's not going to happen very soon.
Rod, what has been the effect of the attacks, and I know there were 2 of them yesterday, on the oil industry inside Iraq, primarily, I guess, in the north up by Kirkuk? Is that part of the insurgency having an effect on Iraq's ability to produce oil?
And particularly their ability to export oil. I don't think they've really affected production too much, but they certainly have affected the export of oil. And the attacks by the insurgents have managed to pretty much cripple the export of oil from this country to the point that they're earning many billions of dollars less from oil exports than they had hoped they would be by now.
Rod Nordland, thank you very much for joining us. Good talking to you.
You're welcome. Anytime.
Okay, take care. That was Rod Nordland from, he's a Baghdad bureau chief from Newsweek, for Newsweek magazine, talking to us from Iraq with some, that's good information. I was glad he was on the show. It's 44 past the hour. We'll be back in a second with a story about prisoners of war who are losing their battle here in the States from, the first Gulf War. It's 45 past the hour.
This is Congressman Barney Frank, and you're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
All right, 49 past the hour. Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Good morning.
It's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. There's the sound of the fax machine. It's the Liberal Agenda from the Streisand compound. Here are your marching orders for today. Write these down. One, praise the new pope for meeting with Islamic leaders and protest him until he gives them $10 billion as reparations for the Crusades. Two, sue the U.S. government for incorrectly calculating the odds of you dying of obesity. Three, take a homeless child molester into your home and rehabilitate them with plenty of vigorous adult-style sex. Good luck with that. Yeah. Four, tell President Bush if he really wants Saudi Arabia to pump more crude, he should tell Sheikh Abdullah to take Ann Coulter as one of his wives. Five, today's phrase, just drop it into conversation. Time to boycott the new Star Wars movie for its racism. Why has it got to be a dark side? That's bad. Why is that bad? Wake up, sheeple. The Sith would use their powers for good if they hadn't been marginalized by the Jedis. Yes, wake up, sheeple. All right, so let's get into this story. Supreme Court is now declining to hear the POW's case from the Gulf War, Riley. Now, this is something, this money was promised to these guys. Am I right?
Well, I mean, they sued for it, and they won it at one point. They were supposed to collect $959 million out of the assets that the United States froze of Iraq's. Yeah. And these are people who were, you know, the copy says they say they were tortured during the 91 Gulf War. I pretty much think that's an established fact by now, given some of the problems that they've had in the years since. But the Supreme Court let stand a lower court ruling that throughout this lawsuit, this was by 17 former POWs and 37 family members. This was the U.S. Appeals Court for the D.C. Circuit, and it said Congress never authorized such lawsuits against foreign governments. And what is amazing about this, Mark, is that you know, the Bush administration, the people who say they are for veterans, they honor their service and that sort of thing, were the ones that argued most strenuously against these people's ability to access Iraqi money for the wrong that was done.
So what you're saying, Riley, is why should our vets expect decent treatment from a country they invaded when they can't even get decent treatment from the country that ordered them to do the invading?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you're talking about a guy, for example, like Major Michael Craig Berryman, U.S. Marines, had his legs beaten with a metal pipe and a wooden axe handle. Marine Colonel Clifford Acree, who said he was so near starvation he could feel his body consuming itself.
And they want money from Iraq, but the United States government is saying is that money isn't there, and maybe once Iraq gets organized and the new government falls into place that they'll give you that money. But in the meantime, all that money really needs to go into military contracts.
Well, it says that the money is being needed to rebuild Iraq. But, of course, the big infrastructure plans to rebuild Iraq have been put on hold.
Well, you know, they hinted at this. This is a press conference from November 6, 2003. This is, McClellan, the press secretary, White House press secretary, is talking to reporters about this very case.
Is it the view of this White House that that money would be better spent rebuilding Iraq rather than going to these former POWs?
I don't know that I view it in those terms, David. I think that the United States, first of all, the United States condemns in the strongest terms the brutal torture to which these Americans were subjected. They bravely and heroically served our nation and made sacrifices during the Gulf War in 1991, and there is simply no amount of money that can truly compensate these brave men and women that they went through at the hands of Saddam Hussein's brutal regime. That's what our view is.
No amount.
But isn't it true that this White House is, you know, this White House is standing in the way of them getting those awards, those financial awards, because it views it that money better spent on rebuilding Iraq?
Again, there's simply no amount of money that can truly compensate.
Translated, there is no money that we are giving
suffering.
Why won't you sell out
I'm coming to your question. Believe me, I am. Let me finish.
You think we're stupid?
Let me start over again, though. No amount of money.
Right.
Can
that's the third time.
These brave men and women for the suffering that they
so you're not giving them any amount
of, a very
of money.
Brutal
not
regime at the hands of Saddam Hussein. It was determined earlier this year by Congress and the administration that those assets were no longer assets of Iraq, but they were resources required for the urgent national security needs of rebuilding Iraq.
For Hal Burton.
There's simply no amount of compensation that could ever truly compensate these brave men and women.
At least letting them get.
See, I disagree with the way you characterize it.
We're saying there's no amount of money.
Frozen assets of the former regime.
Then
why isn't that money, per a judge's order, available to these victims?
So I pointed out that was an issue that was addressed earlier this year. But make no mistake about it, we condemn in the strongest possible terms the torture that these brave individuals went through at the hands of Saddam Hussein. There is simply no amount of money that can truly compensate.
Five times. We're not giving them any money.
Who heroically served our nation.
Some of the money.
And again, I just said that had been addressed. That had been addressed earlier this year.
They're entitled to the money under that law. The question is this administration blocking their effort to access some of that money? And
I don't view it that way at all. I view it the way that I stated it. This issue was addressed earlier this year, and we believe that there's simply no amount of money that could truly compensate these brave men and women for what they went through and for the suffering that they went through at the hands of Saddam Hussein. That's my answer.
So we're not going to give them any amount of money for what they went through, is what he's saying, Scott McClellan.
And neither is the Supreme Court.
You hear how restricted he was, how constricted his throat was, how like he knew that he had to hold this, you know, he had to hold this line, and this line was essentially, you know, vaguely coded, you know, political speak for we're not giving him any money. That, you know, the sort of setting it up with, you know, how brave and how, you know, they deserve, you know, respect and honor. But they're not getting any amount of money. None. No amount. Vaguely coded. And now today, Supreme Court declines to even hear the case. So they are going to get no amount of money.
No.
For what they went through.
No.
It's unbelievable. They can't give them anything. It's just unbelievable.
Well, I mean, this is the way politicians and the courts, in some cases, typically respond when they want to do something that they know is going to anger the American people. I mean, denying these people and coming down on the side against these people being justly compensated, they know that would be a public relations disaster under normal circumstances. Why hasn't it been a public relations disaster? Because Scott McClellan sits there and says no amount of money, so people hear that and they think that they take him literally, when in fact he meant no amount of money. Period.
All right. Well, we're going to go away for a few minutes. We're going to come back. We've got John Nichols later in the show. We'll be back with the Dream Diary and a very interesting gubernatorial candidate in New Jersey.
Absolutely. Wow, I live there. I don't know how that's going to work. We'll be right back. This is Air America Radio.
Good morning, it's 6 past the hour. It's Morning's Edition here on Air America Radio. Good morning, Mark Riley.
Good morning, Mark Maron.
Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor. We're having an interesting conversation in the downtime here. I swear to God, we should do a show of what goes on in between the breaks. Now, me and Kayla were talking, and we're all sitting there talking about our wives, our girlfriends, respected people. The conversation was basically about, or revolving around, I got a dream diary to do, Don.
Well, maybe you can merge the two. We're going over here.
I think it's an interesting conversation because it's about jealousy. It's about how do you react when some other guy's looking at your
significant
wife,
other,
your girlfriend,
yeah.
Significant other. Well, this is go. I imagine it's genderless and sexual preference. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, preference neutral.
Yeah, whoever your significant other is, if you're walking down the street with them and there's other people looking at them, like checking them out, thinking those thoughts, do you respond with, you know, what's up?
You can't do that walking down the street in New York because in New York, you know, you'll end up with fights every block.
But, dude, I don't even think it. I literally, I don't know when it happened. But if other guys are checking out my wife, I'm literally like, she's my wife. How do you like that?
Wow.
Yeah, how are you? It's sort of like it makes me feel good. I find it flattering.
No, it's cool. Look, I find that the biggest problem with all this is if somebody gets liquored up. See, because when they get liquored up, then, you know, if you say, oh, yeah, you're looking at my wife, great. And then they take it to the next level. And then you got to step between them and your wife.
Not only
that,
look
at
it.
Hold up, pal.
Yeah, but what are you going
to
do about it?
I'm getting ready to crack. Now, what? I mean, it can't get to that level. So at some point, you got to say, hey, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Yeah, look elsewhere.
But what if it's like coworkers? You know, like what if like your coworkers are looking at your wife or girlfriend?
Does that make a difference?
Well, okay. See, does it? I think
Chris,
it does.
Chris, I'm sorry. But, you know, they were right. They were right there. And
my girlfriend was wearing a kind of revealing dress the other night and at a party. And I think that some people were checking out my girlfriend's,
Come on. How can you not? That's why people wear clothes. You know what I mean? You're going to check out the clothes.
Yeah, but should I be comfortable with that or should I be, like, pissed off?
Well, it depends. I think you should be comfortable with it. And if you're pissed off, you should. I've never seen you hold back. Why don't you just Why don't you just give that weird crazy look you get and go, yeah, so what do you think? Is that okay with you? I mean, all right there? You can be all right? Or that? Yeah.
Chris, before you go any further, did you say anything before you left to go to the party to Jackie about what she was wearing? I mean,
no,
you didn't have a problem with it, right?
I'm not her boss. You know,
yeah,
she
there
can
you
wear
go.
Whatever she
wants.
She
can wear whatever she wants.
Yeah,
you're an enlightened man.
I thought she looked great, and she was, I thought you guys were going somewhere else. That's how good I thought you guys were.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I thought, like, what's going on? You're just stopping over here, and you're headed to the opera?
Oh, cool.
What's happening? I did, and she looked at me funny. Then I felt bad because I was like, "Wow, what the hell's going on? Why did you dress up? You know, all of us are just sitting here wearing the stuff we worked in, you know." And I felt embarrassed. I shouldn't have said anything. But I personally believe that you should be, as long as it's appropriate, and your wife or girlfriend or boyfriend is not flirting back.
That's a big part of it. My girlfriend tells me stories about like guys, like the delivery men where she works. Like they always constantly ask her out and stuff.
Right.
You know, like you just said, they're like in love with her.
But you know that's what some people do, man. They're guys.
Exactly.
I had a friend who used to stand in front of a building in Greenwich Village and crack on every woman that walked by. Every woman that walked by, it didn't matter what they looked like. And I said, "What's wrong with you? You're getting rejected." You get rejected 99 times out of 100. He said, you know why I do it? For that one.
Yeah. I heard that. I've never been one of those guys. For me, it took weeks. I'm going to ask her out. I'm not even that – I can't even remember when I did that. Because after a certain point, once I became a comic, once I got older, it just became like, well, she looks like she's into me. Perfect. You know what I mean? But
is that what happened with Mishnah?
No, oh my God! That Mishnah thing was mind blowing. The whole thing was mind blowing.
Do we have time in this segment?
yes, we do.
Well, what were you? But you were just talking about though, because my wife is particularly, all of our wives and girlfriends are attractive, but there's no way that my wife is going to walk through life and not get hit on constantly.
Yeah.
And for some reason, when we first started seeing each other, I didn't really process that. And like I had that day where you're like, "What, do you guys hit on you?" And she's like, "Yeah,
yeah,
all the time." And I'm like, Like who? Like anyone I know? I mean, you know, like it becomes this thing where eventually you just got to detach from it, and you got to trust the person you're with, and that's, you know, what else?
No, you do have to trust, because look, you end up coming home from work one day, and there's a guy working on your front door or working on something in your house. You say, what is he doing?
Yeah.
What the hell is he doing?
Yeah, what time did he get here?
Yeah. Why is he still here? Didn't he finish this? Wasn't he supposed to finish this yesterday?
Why is his tool belt in our bedroom?
Why is the mat wet in the shower?
Yeah. But no, this doesn't happen for women. Like, women don't have this problem.
Oh,
like,
yeah, they do.
Like, they're not like, oh, man, I hope someone's not going to, you know, like, flirt with my boyfriend.
Are you crazy?
Oh, no,
my wife is crazy.
Oh, don't delude yourself about that. Let me tell you something. Women think about it exactly the same. You know,
they play it differently.
Yeah, they play it differently, but they get their little in.
What, are you crazy? My wife was like, you're out of your mind.
What? Tell me, please.
Oh, if I talk to, like, if we run into somebody on the street who's a woman who's like, you know, hey, Mark Maron, how's it going? Even if I know them a little bit and she doesn't know them, she's like, I could see it. I can see what's going on.
Oh,
I can see that look in her eye. I mean, she's one of those people. She's a fan, right? She's a fan. And I'm like, all right, take it easy. It's like, who was that?
Yeah,
but it goes on, man.
Have you ever run into a woman you know, not necessarily slept with, but know while you're with your wife, and it takes you too long to introduce her? So the wife sticks out her hands and says, hi, I'm so-and-so.
Why is your passion is just
there we go. You're not even married, man.
Well, sure, I'm not. First of all, Kayla, what planet are you on?
Yeah.
Like, what are you talking about here, man?
Uh-oh.
First of all, girls are jealous just the same as guys are. But I actually have an example from Mark Riley's barbecue.
Uh-oh.
Of a little jealousy coming straight from Kayla's girlfriend directly.
Whoa.
Yes. You know,
where was I? I must have been in the bathroom.
You must have been at the next table or something. It was at Riley's big barbecue festivity
last year.
Well, I made some joke. She made some joke about the fact that it was all guys in the morning show. And I made a joke. And I met Jackie.
That wasn't
many
a
times.
Joke.
Yeah, right. I've met Jackie many times, and she's a really nice person. You know, but
thank you.
She made some comment about how it's all guys in the morning show, and I commented on the fact, you know, I made some joke about strippers.
Yeah.
Saying, usually when we have parties, we get a bunch of strippers.
Yeah.
Which, of course, we listened to that there was a joke.
Yes.
But I made
there were
comment.
No strippers at my barbecue.
Correct. I made that joke, and Jackie, Chris's girlfriend, said, oh, there better not be any strippers at your parties. And I was like, whoa, it was just a joke, you know. She had a smile on her face when she said it, but, you know, she was kidding on the square.
Yeah, of course they get jealous.
She doesn't care for the strippers.
That's not the same as out and out jealousy.
That
right?
isn't the same. That's just sort of like disagreeing with your hobby.
I mean, some people collect stamps. Yeah,
exactly.
Come on now, Marion.
You've got to find a better hobby.
Oh, so they haven't seen your complimentary membership card to Scores.
But they are definitely jealous, man. And like you were saying before, the running into somebody that you've been with, that is bad news. Especially if you hadn't reported that incident to them.
Yeah.
Like, when you've been married to someone for a long enough time, they pretty much need the full roster.
They think they know everybody you've ever known.
Right.
Yeah.
So the surprise is sort of like when you run into one, and they know too. Like Misha will be like, did you sleep with her? And I'm like,
maybe.
No. It's like, well, how? And then there's these stories. Well, how many are there that I don't know about? And then you have to make a new
list. When she asks for a number, that's bad. You have to stick with that number. And if you forget or if it varies at times, well, that's bad news.
I am so beyond numbers. There is no.
But
you get older, you're sort of like, I'm not doing that anymore. I know how long I've been with her, and I know how long I've been good, and she knows, you know, because I was married for a few years.
Hey, let me explain something to you.
Yeah.
None of that matters.
I know.
You are just a hug away from having to call Jacoby and Myers. Believe me, I was walking into a restaurant one night with my wife, ran into somebody I used to work with, a woman on her way out of the restaurant.
Yeah.
Hey, how you doing? Big hug.
Yeah.
Next thing I know, dead silence during the meal. Nothing.
Bad dinner.
Not a word.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
Well, what's the matter?
Uh-huh.
Who was that? somebody I used to... Who?
Yeah.
And you hug them. Why?
Oh.
And I mean, you know, you, believe me, you get put through the ringer about these things.
Yeah, I'm very self-conscious about stuff like that. You got to be real careful.
Well, you got to be careful. The thing is, guys, you know, guys got to give it up too, because guys get as jealous about these things. I mean, we express it differently, but we get just as bad.
You don't flirt anymore, man?
Not much.
Oh, come on.
Not much.
I
don't, because like you guys have
all. Misha is listening.
Are you kidding? That woman is not up yet.
Especially not Los Angeles time.
Yeah, she's definitely not up yet. But no, I used to be like a flirty person, you know. But now, even just by virtue of being in a work environment, I realize like you can't do it. You can't do it.
No, I'm a super flirt.
You are?
Oh my god, I flirt with guys.
Are you doing it with me now? Right
yeah.
Now?
But no, I flirt with a lot of people, and my girlfriend has a problem with that. Well, but she kind of understands. She's like, look, I know you flirt with people, because that's just who you are. You know, she accepts that.
Not me. I play hard to get.
You do?
No, absolutely. Especially now. I've been married for 14 years.
I literally just because of my past, I don't even engage that way. You know, I try to be there's people from the old days that
My wife doesn't understand it, because we'll go places I never dance anymore. Because I used to dance all the time.
Uh-huh.
And I told her, look, the reason why I don't dance with you now is because I don't want to. It triggers a whole bunch of stuff from back in the day.
Dancing is a gateway drug for you?
Yeah, it is. It is absolutely a gateway. Next thing you know, I'm staying out all night. I'm going, who are you?
I just feel like you run into a real gray area, you know, because sometimes you're just trying to have a friendly conversation. You know, sometimes you have no ill intent.
Juice and juice. You know, if you feel juice coming at you, there's some juice going back, and you know when it happens.
But there's a fine line between friendship juice and the other kind of juice.
Here's you know what the fine line is? The email. When all of a sudden the IMs become dangerous or what have you.
Oh,
you know? Yeah, but just talking, I understand what you're saying. You know, obviously we could go on forever about this. Maybe we should take a break. Get back to well, maybe not. But we're going to take a break. We'll be back with, who knows? We have the Liberal Confessional coming up. Always a popular thing. 18 past the hour, Air America Radio.
MorningSedition.com. Our guests, our comedy, your blog. MorningSedition.com. Air America Radio.
Past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hi.
It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. I forgot to do this. We talked about doing this story about this bipolar guy who's running against John Corzine for the Democratic gubernatorial nomination in New Jersey.
Don't worry, he'll keep.
Yeah, he'll be all right. Apparently, he got mad that the Corzine's campaign didn't return his phone calls.
Yeah,
because he wanted to help out. So, in retaliation, he's going to set up a campaign with no money from a group home for people with mental disorders in New Jersey. And I wish him all the luck. Hopefully, we can get him on the show. In relation to the deep political discussion we were having about personal politics and jealousy and whatnot, we have Raina in. New Jersey responding. Good morning, Raina.
Hi, Raina.
Hi, good morning, guys. Love your show.
Oh, thank you. So what were you thinking?
Actually, I was really enjoying the conversation, but I just wanted to say that I think a lot of times the reason why girls, they're suspicious as it is, but the reason why they try to egg the guys on and, you know, try to incriminate them is because guys are just kind of, I'm sorry to say, but they're just kind of dumb sometimes. They just incriminate themselves. And I think girls just, they like to, you know, just ask the questions they think the guys are just going to, you know, kind of incriminate themselves with.
Okay, wait. So you're saying that you get a charge out of...
You just like to see men squirm. Is that it?
It is. I do that all the time with women.
How long have you been with this guy?
Actually, about 4 years.
Oh, so it's part of your little dance that you guys do.
I've been doing my work, and I think that's why a lot of girls, they just kind of, they probably know that their man's not doing anything anyway. It's just a way to,
to get them worked up and paranoid.
Maybe they'll flip up or something.
Wow.
Did you check his computer for porn?
Sorry?
Do you check his computer for, like, porn sites?
Oh, yeah, I got all that.
What, you got all that out of his system? Is that what you're trying to say?
Oh, no. We have our ways.
Whoa.
No, I mean, girls have to be like, I mean, girls are just smarter than guys. You know what I mean? Not in the sense that guys just, they don't know how much the girls really know a lot of times, you know?
Uh-huh.
Like, they don't know how to cover their tracks as well as
can. Oh, in other words, girls play dumb.
Oh, yeah. I mean, in a sense, they can play dumb, but I think guys, they think they have, they have edge on the girls where, you know, sometimes they feel just because they're a guy, you know, that they can kind of act like a macho dude, and the girls are just going to play dumb and not do anything about it.
I agree with you. I've been suspicious of my wife many times just on terms of how, like, what she's really got planned and what she's really doing.
Right.
Like,
you probably don't know how to, like, investigate.
Here's how I investigate. No, I don't know how to investigate.
I bet your wife would be, like, she probably knows a lot more than you think she knows.
No, I'm not doubting that.
His life is an open book. What are you talking about?
But sometimes she'll work me. You know what I mean? She'll work me. Like, you know, she'll have these big plans that she's got secret plans, and she'll make me part of them, and I won't even know I'm doing it until I'm like, oh, my God, I just got suckered into this.
Exactly.
All right.
That's how it is.
Thank you, Raina.
Thanks loads, Raina.
But that happened the other day because I always, like, I said to my wife, this stuff is ridiculous. This is ridiculous because she'll do things like, you know, well, let's just take this train. And, like, it's not the right train. We have to walk further, right? So we take the other train that we never take. And she's like, oh, I just got to stop at this beauty supply store.
Uh-huh.
And I'm like, you knew this before we got on the train, right? She's like, no, that's ridiculous. How could I possibly know that? I'm like, you knew that you wanted to go here, but you wouldn't say that you were going to go here. And you just said, let's just take this train because it's here. But and she goes, no, that's ridiculous. You're thinking that it's conspiratorial thinking. I wouldn't do that. Why wouldn't I just say I want to go to the beauty place?
It's three card Monty. Who's got the red? Who's got the black? That's all it is. And they always got the black.
Yeah.
That's the problem.
But then the other thing that Raina just said is like, I don't know anything. Now what have I got to do? Oh, my God. You know what makes this even worse?
What?
Because she lives in L.A. half the time. So I can't afford to think along these lines. I'd go crazy.
Yeah, you probably would. But have you called a private detective or something?
I can't do that. Oh, man.
Well, yeah, I know.
It'll be okay.
Trust, my man.
Right, okay, yeah. Trust.
Big trust.
What are we going to do with this show?
We're going to do the liberal confessional, I think. When we come back, sure, why not?
Okay.
We've confessed all this time. Now you can too, listening audience. Stay with us. This is Air America Radio.
You're listening to Morning's Edition on Air America Radio.
Past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Yo.
It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. We're going to be taking your confessions at 866-303-2270, but let's clear the call palette with one final word on the boy-girl thing. Laura in the Bronx. How are you, Laura? Hello, Laura?
No, that's the wrong one.
Oh, that's the wrong one?
Yeah,
hello, Laura?
Go.
Hi.
Hi, Laura.
What do you
Hi,
have to...
Guys, how you doing? I love your show. Your chemistry is too much. I see you every morning. I don't know how I'd get up without you guys.
Oh, thank you. So you got a final word for us on this boy-girl thing?
I just loved hearing your conversation with all the guys joining in together.
Yeah.
Because it just reminded me of these conversations that the girls were having in high school when you guys were avoiding talking to each other by exchanging sports scores and stuff like that. And it's like 20, 30, 40 years ago. Uh-huh. And late afterwards, after the girls are way past that, I hear a bunch of guys going through the same wonderings that we were talking about as teenagers.
So you're saying we're 20 years behind?
And on this issue, absolutely. I'm cracking up listening to you. I think you guys are so cute. It just cracked me up.
I wish I was talking about sports scores. All I was talking about when I was in high school was like, how do I get that girl to like me?
Yeah, but most of the time, the guys that stood around were like,
sure,
you know,
posturing.
Posturing.
All right, so
yes.
Now we, so you're saying we got some catching up to do. Thank you for calling.
Well, you're doing a great job.
All right. Thanks,
Laura.
We may not get there with you.
That's hilarious. We're just like the liberals and progressives that are 30 years behind the conservatives in putting a cultural think tank together. All men are about 20 years behind most women in even in beginning to deal with interpersonal communication. Wow. So here's my dream diary from last night. My therapist told me to write them down. Here they are. I'm at the all-you-can-eat buffet listening to my iPod, and I hear the voice. Mark, damn it, him. Look at all the shiny food. I say, I'm just here for the salad bar, maybe some fruit. That's it. The iPod says, Mark, what does it all-you-can-eat mean? It means you should eat all you can eat. Start with a giant cheddar wheel. Come on, eat like a man. So I carve 4 inches off of the cheddar wheel, and I say, okay, that's enough. The iPod says, that's enough to get us to the potato bar. Smother that potato and bacon bits and sour cream and butter and more cheese and chicken legs. Oh, look, there's ham. As I'm finishing this close encounter-sized potato mountain, I say, all right, I'm not going to inhale this in front of these people. It's disgusting, man. Mark, no one can see you because you're listening to your iPod, and because they're listening to their iPods, it makes you invisible. Are those garlic knots? By this time, I have 2 trays, and the iPod leads me to the section labeled Squishy Meat, Good to Eat. I leave with a scoop of goat, a scoop of cow, and a scoop of something called the Gray Lady.
Oh.
All 3 shimmy in the bowl. So I sit down with my 5 heavy trays and start eating with both hands. The iPod is making these cooing noises in my ear, like, ooh, yeah. After an hour, I'm stuffed. I'm having serious eater's remorse. I'm about to pass out when I hear, Mark, wake up, you fat bastard. Look at you. I think you just went up a cup size, Juggy. You're sweating margarine. I said, no, no. And I cough up some sour cream and some chives, and I think, you're repulsive, Mark. You're going to need all new clothes. Fat, fat, fat boy clothes. It's Huskies and hockey jerseys for you, Mr. No Self-Control. Why don't you go to Lane Bryant and buy a caftan? I nod weakly, full of self-hate. Now get up, stumble into a mall and vomit in front of some teenage girls. Then you'll have room for the dessert bar. Fudge. I woke up and my bed was filled with Texas toast.
Wow.
Oh, yeah, well, you know, that's how it goes. Okay, so moving on.
Speaking of Texas.
Yeah. Here we go. You know, it's not easy being a liberal. We all stray from the straight and narrow occasionally. Are we not doing this now? We don't have to. We can wait. What the hell difference does it make? Let's talk about gas prices. Apparently George Bush made a lot of promises that he's not living up to. Is that right there, Riley?
Well, it's absolutely true.
You know, that now, you know, what's even more interesting is everybody assumes that since he's so tight with the Saudis, so it's so tight with the Saudi royal family that all he had to do was say, hey, buddy, do me a favor, and, you know, and let's lower these prices and jack up production. But as it turns out, Abdullah was not willing to do that because, you know, the Chinese is such a huge gas market there that they're working at full capacity.
Well, you know, President Bush met with Crown Prince Abdullah, and of course he is from Saudi Arabia. He met yesterday at his ranch in Crawford, and some of you may wake up this morning and see videos of the two of them holding hands. Now, that does not mean that the president has changed his opinion on same-sex marriage. All it means is that it's a gesture of friendship.
It means he really wants him to help him out.
Well, yeah, I need your help, Ben. I'm letting the cameras do this.
Come on, Prince, let's skip.
Yeah.
Look at us skipping. Please help us. Please help us.
Perhaps we could dance a little.
Please help us, please.
But it's not going to work.
Yeah.
The Saudis say that as long as there are no refineries, but a small number of refineries in the United States, gas prices will never go down. Stephen Hadley, who was Condoleezza Rice's successor as National Security Advisor, when asked after the meeting, because he was there along with Condoleezza Rice and others, asked after the meeting, well, what's going to happen with oil and gas prices? Well, there's really no way to tell. So bottom line, all of this, and by the way, the Saudis did say that they would try and increase production. I think they're looking at a target of about 12.5 million barrels by 2009.
That seems like a lot of oil to me, Mark.
It's a lot of oil, but it's nothing when you start considering the fact that the Chinese and the Indians, $2.5 billion worth, are ramping up their manufacturing capacity at the same time we're looking for more oil. And they're competing with us for what is very obviously now a limited supply.
So, wow, the cat's out of the bag, folks. There's not enough oil to last forever. Who knew? And, you know, as far as China goes, this stuff has been happening for a while in terms of their growth as an economic superpower. A couple of good things happening countrywide here.
Yeah.
Because of the gas price escalation, it's sad that it takes this to actually get people to be economically more efficient and care about the environment, but that's not the reason. A lot of times, here you have mass transit use up. Not
yes.
because people care about the environment, because they don't want to pay for the gas, but nonetheless, it's a move in the right direction.
Yes.
Hybrid car sales up.
81%!
It's because people care about the environment. Some, most, don't want to pay high gas prices.
Yeah.
I understand, but this is a weird roundabout way that some of the liberal agenda, the real liberal core issues of protecting the environment, are starting to enact themselves around economic realities. Also, hybrid car sales, soaring, like you said, up 81%, and that's good for me because I actually recently, by recommendation, bought some stock in Toyota.
Yeah, and they control 64% of the hybrid car market in this country.
Not a ton. Don't get the wrong idea. I don't have a lot of money.
Yeah.
It's just somebody
don't wait
said,
for him downstairs, folks. He's not that rich. Not yet.
Somebody says, why you put your money in a bank? Why don't you put it into this? And so I did.
You know what, Mark? We've seen this before. I've seen it before anyway. In the mid-1970s and late 1970s, during the last oil embargo, when prices of gas started to skyrocket, Jimmy Carter, and he was courageous for doing this while he was president, tried to enact some of these things. He's the one that really started talking about more fuel-efficient vehicles. He wanted to try and enact legislation that would have forced the car makers to hit certain benchmarks in terms of gas mileage. All of that stuff. You know what happened?
Mm.
The minute the price of oil started to drop, everybody forgot all about it. They went out and started buying SUVs. Why is there a hybrid SUV, by the way? Can somebody explain to me what sense it makes to have a Toyota Highlander hybrid, for God's sake? Nothing against your stock, much.
No, I don't care.
But I don't understand.
I think that a lot of people are going to have to reckon with this. And it's interesting. This is one of those things. And progressives and liberals and people that are against this kind of stuff, a lot of them have so much money that they don't think this really applies to them. And they rationalize these SUVs and stuff. So maybe it might force them to think about more environmentally safe issues. But they somehow, people just are able to rationalize this. But if they really take it in the pocketbook, maybe they'll change their behavior. But again, not necessarily for the right reason.
Well, maybe. I mean, what's next? A fuel-efficient Humvee? I don't think so. I mean, look, at a point, we are going to have to confront, Americans are going to have to confront
Humvee.
The fact that when it comes to oil, we are pigs, okay?
We're pigs, and there's not enough forever. So, I mean,
no.
what these politicians should really be thinking is different energy sources and different ways of doing these things.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's not always easy being a liberal, Riley. We all stray from the straight and narrow from time to time, but when we need to unburden ourselves, we can always confess our liberal sins. If you want to take a turn in the liberal confessional, give us a call at 866-303-2270. That's 866-303-2270. But right now, it's my turn. Bless me, Brother Riley, for I have sinned.
How can I ease your burden, my son?
Well, I'm starting to feel a little guilty because the more I watch Lou Dobbs on CNN talking about the immigration problem, the more I'm starting to agree with him.
Well, Mark, he'll be on our show next week. Maybe you can talk to him about that.
I think I need to get this worked out first, though, Riley.
Well, what specifically is the problem?
Okay, well, look. Okay, when Lou says Mexicans are streaming across our poorest borders and taking jobs away from American citizens, I start to think, you know, yeah, right on, Lou. A lot of people are out of work here. But the Mexicans all have jobs. I mean, do you ever see a Mexican on vacation ever? Huh? They don't take them. They're all working, man. Oh, God, listen to me. I'm stereotyping as fast as I can. I'm turning into George Lopez over here.
Yeah, don't hold back. Let it all out. That's what confession is for, Mark.
Okay, I got something else. You know, all these Mexicans I'm talking about, they're Roman Catholic as well. I mean, the hardcore, gay, and abortion-hating kind of Catholic. So are they going to support Democrats? No freaking way. Oh, see, I did it again.
Starting to see why you're feeling guilty.
Yeah, I know. America, land of opportunity. Send us your tired, your poor, we are the world, all that crap. All right, but sometimes I'm like, stay home. Why not try to make your own country great? If all of you just stayed home and concentrated your efforts there, Mexico might really kick some ass.
Oh, my God.
What? Okay, look, okay, hey. Maybe it's about time us Americans sucked it up and learned how to patiently wait for a job, just like everyone else, you know, in the parking lot of Home Depot. Just swallow our pride and jump in the back of that pickup. Let's go trim some hedges. Let's clear some underbrush like men.
Mark, Right. Your spin control is not working. I think you need 10 inches.
Oh, my God. I feel guilty. All right. Hit me. Hit me, Brother Riley.
Here it is. You have to go to Mexico and try to get a job. Any job.
Okay.
Without any contacts or money or even knowing the language. Plus, I want you to send all the money you make back here to me.
What? How will I eat?
You'll be selling cinnamon sticks to drunk American kids on the side. That money you can keep.
Okay, all right. Maybe you made your point.
Now go forth and sin no more.
Amen. Thank you, Brother Riley. Now, if anyone else out there wants to confess and seek absolution in our liberal confessional, you can give us a call right now at 866-303-2270. That's 866-303-2270. Calls are lining up. We'll deal with you and give you some penance when we get back. It's 46 past the hour.
Join the Morning Sedition right now. Call 866-303-2270.
What?
That's 866-303-2270.
You don't know until you've tried this.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Damn good.
Past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hey.
Time to fess up. We're taking your confessions at 866-303-2270. Let's start with Jeff in New Jersey. Jeff, how have you sinned, my friend?
Hey. Mark and Mark, how you doing, man?
Good, good. Right, what's man. Up, man?
Man, I love the show. I love you guys, man.
Thanks, man. What's your sin?
All right, well, here's the deal. I'm in a band, and the bass player drinks the Kool-Aid, man. He listens to Hattie every day on the radio.
Yeah.
And it's really sad. And he somehow manages to get our band booked to play Hattie's chief engineer's wedding.
Oh, my God.
Ooh.
So I'm actually going to be getting paid to provide entertainment. Because I know Hattie's probably going to be there.
Yeah, I'm sure.
I'm
going
to be getting paid to provide entertainment for a Hattie and probably a lot of other like-minded souls. And someone I have such a visceral disdain for, man. And it just really got me tied up.
Well, I think that we've got to plan a medley here, don't we? We're going to have to, something, maybe a Dixie Chicks medley, maybe have, how about some
Edwin Starr, how about War? What is it good for?
Yeah, Public Enemy, maybe. You got to put together a good medley that, you know, may risk losing the job, but you got to think of some songs that'll really, maybe have Alan Colmes come up and play drums as well.
Yeah.
That would be brutal.
it'll probably make you look bad and you might lose the job. Job, but I think that's the kind of penance you're going to have to take. You're going to have to slip one song in there to make it. Did you ever see the, what was that movie, Old School?
Yeah. I haven't seen it.
Well, the only funny part about that movie, aside from Will Ferrell drinking out of a beer bong, was when the wedding singer at the beginning started putting the word into the songs, just slipping cuss words in. That might be a good way to do it. You're going to have to somehow do something like that to sabotage it a little bit, I'm afraid.
Going with something clever somewhere, but I mean,
apparently I didn't come up with it. But
I have a couple of months to like think about it.
Well, what have you been thinking?
There's all sorts of things I could slip in, but I also don't want to get fired. You know what I mean?
Like, what were you thinking?
Oh, just slipping an F-bomb on the mic or something. You know?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Yeah.
To make Hannity's skin crawl somehow, but I mean, I
don't know if an F-bomb would make his skin crawl.
You know what you should do? True. Maybe sample some of his worst some radio moments. Mock him, on the radio and put it into the song.
Yeah.
I got a sampler on my keyboard.
Man, you got some work to do.
Yeah.
You got to make this work. Yeah, yeah.
I'll do my best, gentlemen. I'll do my best.
Well, let us know what
work
happens.
Work on it, Jeff.
Yeah.
Work
all right,
on
thanks,
it.
Buddy.
I will, brother.
Thanks, Jeff.
I feel like
is that John Nichols? No, he's late.
Brother, Brother Nichols will be on later. But yeah, I think he was talking about being Brother Riley and Brother Mark.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
We got to do better with these penances, Riley. Oh, let's try this one. Catherine in South Carolina. How are you, Catherine? What's your sin?
I'm doing well. How are you guys?
We're okay.
All right.
Good. Well, my sin is that I was on a waiting list for about 2.5 years for a hybrid Highlander, Mark.
Yeah. Oh! Why?
I'll tell you why. Because I have a very large dog. I don't have any kids or anything. And we needed something to take her. I can't put her in the back of a Prius, okay?
Yeah.
How about the trunk? Oh, no, I guess not.
That's not my dog.
I know. I love dogs.
So we had to have some way to take her around. So I thought, when I first saw they were coming out, the minute I saw the first press release, I was the first person on the waiting list.
Right.
Really?
Yeah, and unfortunately, my car died before they ever came out, so now I'm driving a regular Highlander.
Oh, you got a regular Highlander?
Okay, yeah. so that's good that the greenhouse effect and the world might rot, but as long as your dog has a nice place to sit, that's what's important. I'm glad you have the right priority. So you care about animals, yet you don't care about the end of the world.
Yeah.
Hey, I've got to drive something that can actually hold.
Why don't you ride your dog?
Yeah, right.
Guys, I'm getting. You know what's funny? It's the hybrids. The news says that they're going to get like 27 miles per gallon.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And I drive this thing mostly highways because I live in the middle of nowhere.
Right.
And I get 25 miles per gallon on this.
Okay. Oh, that's
pretty good. On the Highlander hybrid.
See what she just did, didn't she?
Yeah.
She did the classic liberal spin.
Yeah.
Which is.
It's only 2 miles to the gallon. What are you quibbling about? Right?
I got it for my dog, but I live in the middle of nowhere, and I get good gas mileage with this one too. So I guess you didn't do anything wrong, did you?
Oh, I got an idea. Why don't you just get a Prius and have your dog chase you as you drive down the road? You're out in the middle of nowhere anyway, right?
How big's your dog, Catherine?
She's about 65 pounds.
What kind of dog is it?
Golden Retriever.
Oh, Golden Retriever. I like them.
Okay.
Fine.
I guess what your penance is that that's not that big a dog, all right? And I think it's a bad excuse.
Yeah.
All right? And I grew up with 3 old English sheepdogs, and sometimes, the dog's going to have to take the hit and sit squished, So if you want to be responsible for the planet, go return your semi and get a socially responsible vehicle and let the dumb dog sit up front in the seat.
Yeah.
Shove the dog in the back of the Prius.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah.
So, the sad dog. Look at the sad dog. We're all going to fry. Thanks, Catherine.
Thanks, Catherine.
Thank you.
Wow, did you make her feel bad or what?
I don't know what happened. I just got tired. I got tired of handing out the dumb penances, and I was like, let's go with this. Let's see. Oh, I want to take this on. I don't know if we'll have time to give him the penance, but maybe we can do it over the top of the break. Chris, in Baltimore, what is your sin, Chris?
I'm kind of ashamed to admit this, but I do television production and editing, and recently my business partner came in, so we had an edit to do.
Let me just try and translate because it sounds like you're talking on a ham radio.
Yeah.
All right, so you're an editor and your business partner came in. Do you do a commercial editing?
Yeah, we do it for different ad agencies.
Okay.
He said we have a client coming in today. And the client sat down and started to play the audio that my partner had cut. It was a descending time delay ad.
Oh, my God. So you, because of your partner, have now got to edit a defense of Tom Delay, an apology for Tom Delay?
Yes, it's really...
oh, my God. You're going to be in hell with Hitler. I'm kidding. We're going to get you a penance on our way back. Hang on if you can. It's 57 past the hour. He's going to edit a Tom Delay, a pro-Tom Delay commercial.
Too deep. But we got iNews 5000 and John Nichols from The Nation coming up. Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Six past the hour, it's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. I'm Mark Maron, that's Mark Riley.
Yes, it is.
Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor. Chris, still on the phone with a hell of a confession from our last confession segment, to the point where we were just baffled. We had to call in the serious liberal clergy.
Artillery, that's right.
Chris's confession is that he and his partner, because they were brought a job to edit a commercial for Tom Delay, basically an apology for Tom Delay. I don't know if there's anything I can say, Chris, that's going to alleviate the guilt you must feel.
It's killing me. In fact, when I finished the ad, I said, boy, this would be a great, liberal confessional, and here I am.
In all honesty, in terms of, outside of getting paid well, I hope that it was worth it in the sense that of what the guilt you're carrying. But I think you're going to have to volunteer your services to either, just some 527, moveon.org.
Moveon.org.
Perhaps call Hillary Clinton's office and insist that you want to be part of
her reelection campaign next year.
Absolutely, I can do that. I really think, and this is really weird because I can't even think of a funny one, because I think that if you really are a liberal, that this has really got to be hurting you. So you're going to have to do some serious karma repair and get involved with providing some services for a progressive cause.
Well, I thought, you know, my idea was I was going to call and donate the money I need to Richard Morrison's campaign, but then I heard this morning that, you know, he's not running, so guess we're going to have to wait to see who runs against the lady.
Well, that's not a bad idea. Once you stash at least a good percentage of that money, that would make you feel sufficiently less guilty to donate to a cause that you think is worthy.
Definitely.
I will.
Okay,
thank
Chris.
You, Mark, Mark.
All
yeah,
right, Chris,
thanks for sharing. It's so weird that I didn't even, like, when we were talking about it, it's like there's, the guy must feel really awful. I mean, that's a hell of a choice to make, you know?
Well, you know, a Democrat, he mentioned something that I hadn't thought of before. This Democrat that was going to run against DeLay has dropped out.
Yeah, I heard
that
today.
Is there anybody that's prepared? I mean, it's not like he got one with 99% of the vote. Hmm. He's not Charlie Rangel or anything.
Yeah, I guess maybe he's got people scared there in Texas as well. He scares a lot of people, this guy. And I read more emails, too, yesterday that a lot of people still think that we should leave him in there and use him to damage, to dirty up the rest of the Republicans. But I'll tell you, when you do a job, it's amazing how much we rationalize, which is a strange thing about progressives, liberals, and a lot of us. It's very hard to live a life that truly honors all, you know, progressive goals, all liberal goals in terms of, you know, how you make a living, in terms of what you buy, you know, where you buy it, you know, who do you, you know, associate with, how do you engage, you know, in the world, you know, and still have your political philosophy and your personal ideology intact. So many people go through life, you know, scared or making concessions because they feel like they have to. If they don't, either their well-being will be compromised or their livelihood will be compromised. It's really tough stuff.
Well, I mean, you do the best you can under the circumstances. Remember that many people who are on the ideological right have some really deep inherent contradictions that they live.
A lot of them are gay and refuse to accept it.
They refuse to accept it.
And all that self-hatred comes out in policy.
Or they're big-time gamblers.
Uh-huh.
Or they're people who are involved with having children out of wedlock. I mean, they run the gamut.
And a lot of them are people who are married to these right-wing men. And, you know, out of that contempt and self-hatred, they are justifying policy. I really think that, you know, that Lynn Cheney and people like James Dobson's wife, who apparently...
Does he have one?
Yeah. Yes, she bends over and whispers in his ear when he gets forgetful.
Oh, okay.
And I think it's sort of like, remember, you're evil, and I'm in charge of you.
Yes.
Yeah.
The name is God. God, James, God.
But I don't know. Like, I in my own life, I find it's very difficult to, you know, with the Choose the Blue, that's a good example, where, you know, could we only shop at places that don't give money to causes we don't believe in? Can you really do that? Is it practical? And I think that on some level, if we don't all do it, what is the real impact? Because obviously we can have a tremendous financial impact on the business community if all people who believed, if all 56 million people who voted against Bush and don't believe in that policy machine and don't want to have anything to do with funding it, if they all really stopped engaging in transactions where money went to that, it would have a tremendous impact.
Oh, it would. But see, the problem, Mark, is that you'd have to get the 36 million who would do it right off the top to intimidate the 20 million who wouldn't be inclined to do it. Then you'd have the 56. You know, when in South Africa, when they were trying to get rid of apartheid, they had general strikes.
Yeah.
Now, not everyone, not even all black people in South Africa were down with the idea of general strikes because it meant they got no money. But you know what happened? The African National Congress planted people in front of these gold mines and dared people to break the general strike, and they didn't do it.
Yeah.
And it brought apartheid to its knees eventually. But you got to use some tactic to bring everyone on board, and those tactics aren't always pretty.
But they're not pretty, and also they're not that organized in terms of our side of things. You look at how much Karl Rove and how much George Bush and how much this machine is pandering to the right-wing Christian machine, to the fanatical machine. It's specifically to do exactly what you're talking about, that there is no point of resistance that will make an impact on if they consolidate all those religious people that are fanatics and that, you know, and even the ones that are marginal that just believe this way, that's a huge amount of people. So it's going to take us a huge amount of people in mass You imagine what you take, what it would take to really make an impact. How they trivialize political activism. How they are able to the media trivializes. Even 500,000 people show up somewhere, they'll say 10 people showed up, and you'll see shots of the one goofy guy wearing the granny glasses and the fez with the sign that says "No meat." You know what I mean? So it's the amount of people it would take to make an impact, and a lot of people think the internet's going to do this, but still nothing is like people showing up.
Well, I agree with you. That's why I believe that there's going to have to be a mass gathering in Washington, because that's where all these mass gatherings have an impact, of progressive people of faith, or people of no faith at all, who were down with the program. And you get all of them down there at once to say, you know what, this is not Christianity. What these people are perpetrating is a political fraud. It is not based in religion. It is based in nonsense.
I just wish that everybody all at once, you know, half of the people, like 56 million people who voted against this guy, against Bush, if we could all do something at once, it would be beautiful. Here, we got Ray in New Jersey. He's got some ideas. How are you, Ray? What's going on this morning?
Hey, Ray. How you guys doing?
Good.
All right. Yeah, you know, I just wanted to make a comment. We can live a conscious consumer life. I personally have a strong relationship with the Tibetan people, and one thing I haven't done for 6 years since I became aware of it, I have not bought anything from China.
Oh my God! How do you even do that?
You can do. I'm telling you.
I think part of me was made in China.
I think if you go around the back of the White House, you're going to see a sticker, a little gold sticker on the back that's going to say "Made in China." But we can do it. I'm also a vegetarian, and as far as like all the shoes and everything I wear, I mean, it's a pain in the ass. But you know what? You can do it, and if we can do it, and it's, we just live a life in this country that is just so consumer based, and we've it's our society, it's how we've grown up.
Quick question, Ray. I got a question for you.
Yeah, man.
Because this is something that actually is in my own personal experience. Not too long ago, I bought a watch. You know, an inexpensive watch, just something to have around. And it turns out, yeah, part of the watch was made in Japan, but the other part of the watch was made in China. If that happened to you, would you take the watch back?
I'll tell you the truth. I certainly would, because there are plenty of watches out. You know what? First of all, you don't need a watch.
You just need a sundial.
You need a sundial.
No. We work in a time-based industry over here.
Well,
we come in at dark.
I understand what you're saying, but you got to give up a little bit if you really want to live that. You know,
I got to quit my job.
No, it might not be the right watch. It might not be the most beautiful watch, but you can find something that tells the time. I'm sure your cell phone has time on it, man.
Yeah, but that's all made in China.
Yeah.
Well, then you don't. Nah, there must be. I don't own a cell phone either. You know, you're talking about living in a hut. I'm resisting, man. It can be done.
Well, I'm glad you got a radio. Thanks for calling, Ray.
Yeah, thanks, Ray.
I got to check that one, see where it's made.
That might be the last time Ray listens to our show. Thank you.
Thanks, Ray. No, you know, it's funny. I grew up with a woman who now runs an investment company that makes socially responsible investments. And, I mean, it's an incredible
thing. Oh, you gave me her name, actually.
Yeah, her name is Amy Domini.
Okay. Well,
and she lived down the street from me. Her brother and I were very close friends when we were kids. And she runs a company called Domini Social Investing, where they actually, you know, show you they don't invest in anything having to do with tobacco, you know, anything that's not socially responsible, they don't invest in, period.
But, well, I guess we got to go take a break.
Yeah.
Let's take one more call, Chris. Karen, quickly, what do you got?
Hey.
Hi.
Hi.
As with everybody, I love you guys, but I had this one idea. People chose, if you could start, like, the idea of boycotting one major thing. I mean, for example, this probably wouldn't do it because it's too many red states involved. Walmart. Something, just one thing for one day that can make an impact on Wall Street. It doesn't have to be everything all the time to start with. Just one thing.
Well, we got to get everybody to do it, though, because if just me and you do it and there are 12 people do it, okay, so today I'm not going to buy McDonald's. Is that really going to hurt McDonald's? I doubt it.
No, but it would have to be built up over a time period, starting with through stations like yours or some other syndicated shows and the Internet. And to get a buzz going, and it might take 6 months to make sure enough people have heard it.
Okay.
But,
all right, will you get to work on it and tell me how it's going, and I'll try to help out?
Okay.
Okay, Karen, call us up if you've got an idea of how we can do this, because I think you're right. And these things have been tried before, like Adbusters used to buy Nothing Day. But it really is about getting everybody involved, and I think making it fun on some level.
So, yeah, because, you know, people are trying to do this don't buy gas on May 19th thing, which has been around for a minute. Yeah, but it doesn't really work because everybody goes and fills up on the
20th.
Oh. Yeah, good point, or the 18th.
All right, Karen, we'll figure it out.
Okay.
Thanks.
Bye.
Okay,
thanks,
bye.
Karen.
At 17 past the hour, we'll be back with, we got John Nichols coming up, we got the iNews, and we also, let's talk a little bit about the Senate. We'll talk to you in a second, Air America Radio.
Morning Tradition, delivering you from evil. In 3 hours or less, Air America Radio.
It 22 past the hour. Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hey,
Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. I am going to be in Cincinnati, Ohio, May 6th and 7th for 4 big shows. You can listen. You can go to morningsedition.com for ticket info if you're listening to 1530 WCKY, the Revolution of Talk Radio in Cincinnati. Come on down May 6th and 7th at Go Bananas. Also, looks like it's time to do this. Sometimes when you read the headlines, it can be tough to figure out just exactly what the mainstream media is saying. So luckily, as you all know, I have an iNews 5000. Some of you wondering where you can get it. Well, you can't. Had it made. How does that grab you? Let's feed it some headlines, see what happens. All right, from the Globe and Mail. Troops who killed Italian did no wrong, U.S. says. Read that to it. Troops who killed Italian did no wrong, U.S. says. Translation. Rumsfeld praises marksmanship, can do American spirit. From Fox News, Pakistani prisoners use turbans to escape. Read that in. Pakistani prisoners use turbans to escape. The translation is Pakistani prisoners banned from watching cartoons. Guards warn, it gives them ideas. From the Associated Press, flesh chunks found in Iowa water line. Flesh chunks found in Iowa water line. Translation, Wendy's new chili, a hit in Des Moines. How do you like that? In minutes, we have John Nichols from The Nation, who is our brother.
Yes, our brother.
How you doing, brother? Anyways, let's talk about the Senate. What is going on, Riley? Senate Democratic Leader Harry Reid is talking about making some sort of compromise on the judicial thing.
Let's make a deal, Harry Reid is doing. Now, this is the general outline of the deal. 4 of Bush's nominees out of the 10 that still have yet to be confirmed would go down. They include Priscilla Owen, Janice Rogers Brown, William Myers III, and William Pryor Jr.
They're out.
They would be out of the picture. Now, the other side of the equation is that several would, in fact, be chosen. Actually, 2 would be approved outright, and that would be Richard Griffin and David McKee. Now, they have been nominated twice prior for the 6th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals, which includes the state of Michigan. That's important because during the Clinton years, the Republicans would not even let Clinton's nominees for the 6th Circuit get to the hearing stage.
Mm-hmm.
And Carl Levin, our good friend, who we've spoken to before, and the other senator in Michigan, whose name escapes me right now, have a problem with that. So they're willing to sign on to this, apparently, to allow these 2 to go through. The other 4 that we mentioned earlier would go down, and the final 2 would, I guess, be subject to some form of negotiation.
Well, Brown and Owens, I know, are bad news. You know, on a policy level, they're incredibly activist judges. They honor, you know, corporate interests and moral values, as they call them in the fanatical Christian racket. So they were definitely questionable on many levels.
I mean, this is a quote from Janice Rogers Brown. These are perilous times for people of faith. Was she at Justice Sunday? Anyway, not in the sense that we are going to lose our lives, but in the sense that it will cost you something if you are a person of faith who stands up for what you believe in and say those things out loud.
That is so party line. That is such horse. That is so awful that somebody who is being thought of as a judge would say something so heinous. This characterizing the Christian faith as victims in this culture is so a ploy, it's a tactic, it's propaganda, and it's garbage.
Well, yeah, and see,
not true.
Janice Rogers Brown is not, I mean, she's not supposed to be James Dobson. She's not supposed to be Tony Perkins. She is a jurist. She's not supposed to be talking about that, not publicly at any rate, not so that, and by the way, there was no transcript of what she said, because according to the Stanford Advocate, a spokesperson said that this was a talk, not a speech. However, Judge Brown's office did not dispute the Stanford Advocate's account of what she did say.
But I think the real problem that people have is that if you're a person of faith and you want to shove that particular faith down someone else's throat or try to make the entire country honor it because it's your faith, then that's a problem. And that is not a victimization problem. That's a problem because it usurps the Constitution and it goes against what this country is built on. The separation of church and state is to guarantee that all people of all different faiths can honor whatever they want and not just one. So I think that her honoring just one, it seems pretty specific to me. I know who she's talking about, don't you?
Oh, yeah. Now, we should say that the other side of Harry Reid's proposal is he's willing to let some of these people pass in exchange for a complete elimination of this nuclear option talk.
So we keep the filibuster.
Keep the filibuster.
You can have these couple of judges.
Good one? Bad one?
I don't know.
We'll find out. Let's talk to John Nichols about it when we come back. He'll be able to tell us exactly what's going on down there in our nation's capital. This is Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
Four past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Good morning.
Hey, it's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. Look, just a shout out to everybody who's willing to get out tomorrow and protest. If you'd like, go on to moveon.org. Apparently, there's a massive national wave of protest to stop the judiciary, to fight for a fair and independent judiciary. Let me just read this. Let's see, Coalition for a Fair and Independent Judiciary. There are protests across the country tomorrow at 5 p.m. If you want to know where there is one within miles of your house, go on to the moveonpack.org, or you can go to morningsedition.com, and we'll link you up with that, but that's tomorrow afternoon if you're interested in that. Since our president is openly operating in a different reality, we think it's important that Americans know what's happening in his alternate universe. Luckily, we have a staffer who lives in that world, as you all know. So now on the phone, once again, is Planet Push Bureau Chief Lawton Smalls. Good morning, Lawton.
Good morning, Mark. God's on your screen. Turn off the Xbox.
Oh, great.
God's on.
Hey,
Turn that off.
You seem upbeat, my friend. That always makes me a little nervous.
Well, it's just 2 days after Justice Sunday, and I am still full of beans, Mark.
Oh, boy.
Fired up, motivated. Mm-hmm. You know, I never knew how much I hated that filibuster until I saw that program.
It almost made
me to forget to hate the activist judges. I got to keep hating them. I got to enter new groups into my hate list on my Palm Pilot.
It's
getting crowded in there.
Oh, my God.
I need more RAM.
You know what, buddy? Listen to me.
Rotten,
I couldn't even see Justice Sunday because it was broadcast on some kind of weird closed circuit thing. You had to have some sort of special Jesus card to see it, apparently.
Well, no offense, Mark, but the people who needed to see it.
Now, why would you do that? Why not just put your big important message out there on a network show, coast to coast? Let everybody see it, Lawton.
Do you really think we would trust the limousine liberal media to get on board with something as important as killing the filibuster?
There is no.
If we'd done that, there'd been sniveling pundits dunking our message in elitist spin. It would have come out dripping with gay.
What is that?
No, sir.
What
is
that?
You had to get out there pure, undiluted, and if I may say so, heterosexual.
You know what? You're starting to scare me because, you know, I just haven't heard you talk like this before. You know, but when you say stuff like that, you know, you're already talking to people that have heard the message. I mean, aren't you just preaching to the choir, Lawton?
Preaching to the choir. I like it when you talk that way, Brother Mark.
Oh, boy.
We're getting it. Well, no, that's not what it's all about. We're energizing our base. You know, George W. two-term mandate Bush loves to get his base energized.
I don't know what you're trying. I don't know what you're trying to accomplish here, Lawton.
We're breaking away from all of this, Mark, leaving all of you behind. Here's a goodbye note. Dear America, we're leaving. Love, Lawton.
What does that mean? What does that mean, breaking away?
We're breaking away from your secular humanist.
Oh, come on, Lawton.
We got our own TV networks, our own radio stations, our own schools, our own rock and roll. Mm-hmm. We're working on our own
terrific.
Highway system, our own water supply, our own news.
Oh, yeah, your own news. You mean like Jeff Gannon?
Well,
you know?
Bad choice, but it was a good idea, definitely.
Oh, boy.
Somebody else. And, of course, we're creating our own Army, Navy, and Marines.
What are you talking about?
I wasn't supposed to talk about that.
Okay.
Forget that.
So let me understand something. You're forming your own country.
Oh, no. We're taking over this one.
Oh, my God.
You see, we're growing like
a
weed.
Now he's telling the truth.
We're growing like a weed. Mm-hmm. So much faster than y'all in the blue states with your married, with no kids, yuppie city lifestyle, no kids. We're going to elbow your kind right on out of here.
Oh,
you know how many evangelicals are in this country? Right
no,
now?
I don't, and I don't think you do either, to be honest with you.
700 million people.
There's not even
at least 700 million people. That's a fact. You can look that up.
There's not even that many people in the whole country. You know what? Why do you have to have your own media and keep separating yourselves? You want to know why you have to have your own media to keep separating yourselves from mainstream America?
Gay agenda?
No, because your ideas are so crazy and they can't stand up to scrutiny by the mainstream media. You're just afraid of looking ridiculous because down deep, you know how many flimsy and hypocritical arguments you have. Well, guess what? Just because you repeat the same message over and over and over and over again doesn't mean that they're right, my friend.
Right.
Yes, I'm
You're right.
Right. Yeah, cry.
You're right.
Cry.
You're right.
I feel
There's
better.
There's nothing wrong with the filibuster. Nothing. I like it. It's fun to say. Filibuster?
Okay.
I mean, what kind of people say to televised protest against too many words?
Okay.
What's up with that? Stupid.
Oh, yeah.
That's like being against too much cake.
All right, there you
no.
go. See?
Stupid. Dobson? Stupid.
Exactly.
Stupid.
Yeah, absolutely.
So stupid.
Oh, good. Yes, absolutely. But it's going to be okay, buddy.
Stupid.
It's going to be okay, man. All right. All right. Okay. All right. Okay. Take it easy. Take it easy. Just, you know, I hadn't. Oh, boy. Yeah. I know. You all right?
There's 850 million evangelicals
oh
in the United
God.
States.
Yeah,
that's more than all the people in China.
Yeah, that's a good number. Yeah, you're right on top of things. Goodbye, Lawton. Yes, okay, great. Good.
Brilliant.
Bye.
God loves you.
All right, I'll try. Man, that guy's getting more crazy every time we talk to him. That's what I think, to play along. Anyways, right now, our brother, Washington editor of The Nation, joins us by phone here from Wisconsin. Good morning, John Nichols. How are you?
Hey, gentlemen.
Hey, John.
How are you?
I got to tell you, that guy, he doesn't sound as crazy as he used to.
I know.
He sounds like the majority leader of the U.S. Senate.
Oh. What do you make of that? What is he doing, John? Does he really think he's going to be president?
Oh, yeah. but you think that's like a really insightful Mr. Radio Guy question?
No, I don't, actually.
Yeah,
I was just trying to talk to you.
You think it's like a Mr. Smart Guy question, but they said the same thing about that mildly retarded governor of Texas back in 1999.
Yeah.
Look what happened there.
Yeah, but do you think that Bill Frist actually has the goods? Do you think that, anyone's not going to be able to see through this pandering in retrospect?
Well, I mean, also the fact that he's the biggest crook in the Senate.
He is?
Oh, yeah. I mean, look, his family runs huge health care companies, HMO, all sorts of stuff down south.
Mm-hmm.
And, he had never shown the slightest interest in politics until 1993 when Bill Clinton did a health care plan.
Okay.
This guy got into politics to make sure that his family stayed rich.
So he's probably pushed him by
ridiculously done that.
He's probably pushed him in. His old man probably pressured him in, huh?
Yeah, it's like, you're just a doctor. You run for the Senate. The rest of us make money.
Yeah, yeah.
But the fact is, Bill Frist is goofball. Bad hair.
Yeah.
Of course, that doesn't disqualify.
Kind of doughy face in some weird way.
Yeah.
There's something wrong. His skin just hangs off it.
And he's like, does like diagnoses by satellite.
And
very shy and stuff. So he's got plenty of flaws, but he clearly thinks that he's a viable candidate for president. And, look, this guy, he's had a career. It's like Mr. Easy career.
Mm-hmm.
10 years ago, he just got elected to the U.S. Senate. Now he's the Senate Majority Leader. I mean, he's a very powerful guy. He thinks he can transfer that to a presidential race, and he did do one thing smart. You can't win the Republican presidential nomination anymore unless you have the support of people like your previous caller.
Right.
And so that's what he's doing. And he knows it's stupid.
Yeah, but don't they see through him, too? I mean, come on.
They have a remarkably, they do practice the Christian faith in one sense very well. if you agree with them on every issue, they are remarkably forgiving
and loyal.
I mean, look at Bush.
Yeah, that's right. No, I know what you're saying. That they, it's not necessarily whether or not you're a believer in the way that they want you to believe, but if you will honor their needs.
Right. Brother, I'll tell you this.
Yeah.
I send you down to, like, you know, Bug Tussle, Mississippi, right?
Mm-hmm.
Put you on a stage, and you say, I used to live in, you know, Sin City and use drugs and all that, and I was on Air America Radio with Al Franken and all those people. Says, but I saw the light. I realized I was a sinner, and I realized we got to put gays and lesbians in jail. We got to, you know, like, get put the fetuses back in the women, the whole bit, the whole line. In a week, you'd be the hottest person on the circuit.
But wait, the one thing you forgot, what if I tell them I was a Jew?
Well, that you'd have to fix.
Now, John, I don't know if you've heard about this published report that says that Bill Frist and Harry Reid are actually working on a compromise with these judicial nominees. Apparently, they're going to reject, Reid wants to reject four of them, plus one from the Sixth Circuit in Michigan who he wants the two senators to choose, and they're going to let at least two others, also both from the Sixth Circuit, in. Good compromise, bad compromise, in exchange for getting rid of the nuclear option.
Bad compromise.
Why?
Let me tell you why. First off, why is Frist negotiating? You know, is he negotiating because he's got all of his ducks in a row, everything's going great, and everybody's for it? No.
No.
Remember, Bill Frist is the majority leader of the Senate. He's got a 55-45 majority. He's got total power. The only thing he lacks is the ability to knock out a filibuster. So why is he negotiating with Reid? The fact of the matter is he's talking to Reid because he realizes that this nuclear option thing is not popular with sane adults.
Sane adults?
There are now five Republican senators who have indicated concern about doing this. And so I think Reid has to be very, very careful in forging compromises. I understand the instinct, the desire to maintain the filibuster, but recognize this. So Reid trades off a bunch of judges. He says, okay, we'll approve, even though these people, everyone agrees, are completely nuts, we will put them on the federal courts to decide whether Mark and Mark should be put in prison.
Mm-hmm.
Right? We're going to do that. And in return for that, you're not going to do the nuclear option. Well, what happens 2 weeks from now when Bush nominates another set of nuts? Democrats say, oh, well, we got to filibuster these guys. These guys are crazy beyond belief. They're worse than the last bunch, and one of them is now going to go on the Supreme Court. And then you have Frist come back and say, well, I'm sorry, man. We're going to do the nuclear option now. See, the compromise doesn't get rid of the threat of the nuclear option. And what I think is really important here is I believe that Frist ought to be, you know, continually challenged on this. He ought to be put to the mat on it. And I think, frankly, there are a growing number of Republicans that are uncomfortable with this, and that's where the action is.
And they're uncomfortable primarily because their constituents are uncomfortable with it, or because they believe that it is...
They were educated in colleges.
Right, okay, you know, but so they have a respect for the actual process of government.
Right, and also, remember, this is the bottom line.
Mm-hmm.
I know this may be tough for a few Air America listeners to realize, but there are actually some Republicans who care about the Republic.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a really important thing. The people who have raised concerns about the nuclear option are not merely, you know, your moderates like Susan Collins from Maine or Olympia Snow. It's also people like John Warner, the senior senator from Virginia.
Yeah.
John Warner's a big conservative guy, but he's also a former cabinet member, a former military leader. He has a lot of history. He has a lot of experience. And here's the subtlety. In Virginia, he's had to deal with the right-wing nuts because even though he's very conservative, they don't think he's conservative enough.
Mm-hmm.
He recognizes how wacky these people are, and he does recognize that there come those times when you have to say no to them.
Okay, well, let's talk a little bit more about that. Stay with us, John Nichols from the Nation. We will talk to you in a moment about more of those right-wing nuts and some other stuff as well, because he's got me a little curious in terms of describing this alliance, because it's something that evades me. I don't quite understand it. It's 46 past the hour. Air America Radio.
MorningSedition.com. Our guests, our comedy, your blog. MorningSedition.com. Air America Radio.
Fifty 51 past the hour. It's morning's edition on Air America. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Good morning.
Let's land this thing. We're on the phone with John Nichols of The Nation, also the author of Dick the Man Who Was President, available at morningsedition.com for a bit of a discount and at major booksellers around the world. All right. Hey, John Nichols, so, like, what's the story with this alliance between these Republicans and the Christian right? Who's wearing the pants in this relationship?
Well, did you see Deliverance?
Yeah.
You know that scene on the Hill?
Sure. Who's Ned Beatty?
Let's just say that a lot of them are wearing suits and they're sitting on the Senate floor.
Uh-huh.
The bottom line is this. There are a lot of people in the United States Senate sitting as Republicans who are there only because they were able to win the votes of blue-collar, working-class farmers and workers who had to vote against every interest they have. You know, they may be sitting in a trailer with a hole in the roof, the kids are going to a rotten school, they got no health care, but yet they voted Republican because the Republicans promised they'd do something about abortion.
But so how does that help with the hole in the roof and the kids in the
not
bad
bit
school?
Doesn't do a thing. So that increases the likelihood you'll have another kid. But the bottom line is the reality is the Republican Party has sold its soul.
So where does that lead us, though? Should I be afraid that, you know, they're going to come around to my door and go, you know, believe or leave?
Hey, Jew guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I mean, I don't think that's where they're headed. They're smarter than that. One thing to understand about the Christian right is that, you know, many people on the left look at the Christian right in the sort of cliches of the 1980s, sort of fat Jerry Falwell, you know, blathering around, you know, stumbling across the stage, ranting about things. The fact is that today the Christian right is highly sophisticated. They have as good a set of websites, as good a set of communications operations. They know what they're doing, and they know how to play politics very, very well. That is why Chris went to hang out with them. And so, no, they're not going to do things, by and large, that will cause them to be really scary to at least their base. You know, they know the liberals aren't ever going to like them. What they're working on is building up a political force strong enough to, A, dominate the Republican Party, and, B, intimidate the Democratic Party into backing off to such an extent that they really do get their social agenda.
But, John, there's something I don't understand here. Bill Frist addressed this Justice Sunday thing just, what, 72 hours ago?
Oh, yeah.
All right. And at the time he did that, when he said he was going to pursue this ending the filibuster thing, he was negotiating with Harry Reid. How do the people who were at Justice, how do you think they're going to react when they hear that Frist told them one thing while he was doing something else?
That's a very good question.
But they'd have to read the paper, wouldn't they?
Yeah, if Fox doesn't tell them, they won't know. but that's still a very good question. But let me put it this way. The bottom line is what the Christian right wants is right-wing, militant, anti-abortion judges on the courts. And they don't really care whether they get it through the nuclear option or through a compromise by the Democrats that allows a bunch of them to go on. And so if Frist can go back to them and say, yeah, I threatened them with the nuclear option and they gave me a bunch of judges, that's okay. You know, one of the things is that we've gotten all so wrapped up in this filibuster versus nuclear option argument that we run the risk of saying, oh, wow, if there's a compromise, that's a great thing. It isn't a great thing. To get the courts packed with people who the Senate Judiciary Committee and others have already said aren't qualified to sit on the courts is not a victory for our side. It is a victory for their side.
So you're saying that we should just hold our ground and, you know, and not make any compromises, that the filibuster is important, it's part of the process, and they should just, you know, shut their freaking mouth eventually.
Well, look, the bottom line is I think that the forces of the right win this debate. I think you can go to any main street in America and say, do you think that you should give the religious right and, you know, George Bush at his worst, carte blanche to do everything they want, everything they want. Every poll shows that's not where the American people are. The American people actually, very much in keeping with the founding fathers, like the idea of checks and balances.
Oh, goodness.
They may have voted for Bush, but they want somebody to tell them no now and again.
All right. Thank you, John Nichols. The book is Dick, the Man Who Was President. It was great talking to you.
Pleasure as always, brothers. Be strong.
All right, John, you take care.
Brothers.
Yeah.
That's hilarious.
House 60.
All right, yeah, so you can get that book at morningsedition.com. He also writes for The Nation. So that's it. There's the fax machine from the Streisand compound. Here's your liberal agenda for today. Write these down. One, to promote environmentalism, congratulate the Black Crows for their consistent recycling of Rolling Stones riffs. Two, sue the U.S. government for incorrectly calculating the odds of you dying of obesity. Three, praise the new pope for meeting with Islamic leaders and protest him until he gives them $10 billion as reparations for the Crusades. Four, tell President Bush that if he really wants Saudi Arabia to pump more crude, he should tell Sheikh Abdullah to take Ann Coulter as one of his wives. And five, today's praise just dropped this in the conversation. Time to boycott the new Star Wars movie, man, for its racism. Why has it got to be the dark side that's bad? Wake up, sheeple. The Sith would use their powers for good if they hadn't been marginalized by the Jedis. All right, tomorrow, this is going to be good. We got Melvin Van Peebles.
Van Peebles. My friend Melvin Van Peebles is going to be in. And maybe he can talk about that dark side thing. He's got a new film called How to Eat Your Watermelon in White Company and Enjoy It. And we'll talk about that tomorrow. Good show today, man.
You too, Riley.
We'll see you tomorrow here on Air America Radio.